Hey, Maggie.
Yeah, hey, Anya.
Hey, I just had a quick question for you before the show, you know?
What's up?
We're getting really close to Halloween. In fact, the next time I see you, it'll be after Halloween, won't it? Is
Oh
there
my goodness.
anything you're really scared of?
Let me see here.
You're just so brave and, tall and,
Oh.
not scared of anything, but what about goblins or things that go bump in the night? Or what about ghosts?
Yeah,
Wait,
not.
I hear something.
What
Do
is
you
it?
hear that? There's like some.
Process, but you are going to see this group looking
What's
to
that
working
noise?
like a well-oiled machine.
Oh, dear God.
What is that? Hold on. Those sound like ghosts. Is there anything we can do, Maggie?
That the sound of the GOP celebrating Speaker Johnson?
It
Yeah,
sounds
I'm
like that
scared
to
of
me.
that.
There's something strange in your neighborhood. Who are you gonna call?
Ghostbusters!
Is there something weird and it don't look good? Who are you gonna call?
Ghostbusters!
Everybody, it's the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network, and you heard it here first. The one thing I am afraid of is Speaker Mike Johnson. Yikes! I you know, today began as a beautiful fall Wisconsin day, Anya. I looked out my bedroom window. I saw the brightest, most beautiful sort of fall yellow color. The tree still was fully yellow with leaves from top to bottom. They'll all be gone in a couple days. Took the dog for a walk. Beautiful leaves, beautiful colors. It's the urban, you know, like there's just one layer of fallen leaves on everything. It's a little damp, smells so good. And it was so unseasonably warm today. A beautiful morning for a little walk with the dog. And as I was coming around the corner and enjoying living in a city and how close everything is and how lucky I am and all the parks around us, I then remembered that the GOP elected Mike Johnson of Louisiana as their speaker yesterday, and all
Ooh.
Of that bliss, yes, just went poof. It was just a mirage, all of my fall bliss.
Perhaps that bliss was but a ghost the whole time.
Indeed. Woo!
Ooh.
It is, I mean, it's just, it's so spooky. I make light. It's not a really great day for America. Literally, one side just wore the other side down. Right? Just, oh, we can't take the shame and embarrassment anymore. Fine, this guy. Half of them didn't even know who this dude was. He's effectively a backbencher, basically hasn't ever authored any legislation that's gotten passed, has adopted, and I might talk about it today. I'm not sure. Might talk about some of the things that he's done, including the election denialism and thus and such. But like, just forget about all that. He's a backbencher. He's been there for 7 years, which is an incredibly short period of time before someone becomes speaker. He's never really had any legislation passed. He's got some pretty wackadoo out there beliefs. And he's never managed any sort of sizable staff. I mean, these sorts of congressional reps have maybe a staff of 10. He now has to manage 800 people. A divided party and a looming government shutdown. And I haven't even talked about his policy positions yet. So yeah, that was a little scary. But I do want to really take a moment. I always feel so blessed in the fall in Wisconsin. What great fun it is to live here in the fall. It is so beautiful. Anywhere you go, you can live in the heart of Milwaukee. And within a few blocks, you can find yourself at a beautiful Milwaukee County Park, and you can see the fall colors change. It is one of the things that makes Milwaukee really special, and it makes the entire state special. I know everybody probably has a favorite place to just try to take a minute in the fall. And if you don't, go find one, because it's a good time to really take a breath. I might get to Mike Johnson's record today, but there were so many other like fun, positive things that were happening that I just, let's talk about that, especially because it's kind of, we're close enough to Halloween that we can talk reasonably about this. And I was reminded how much of Milwaukee is steeped in sort of ghost story tradition. Many of you may be aware that I broadcast from a little known location off of Brady Street because I could never make it to downtown Waukesha in time to do the show ever because of my day job. So small location off of Brady Street, and I was at a spot right off of Brady Street before the show talking to the bartender, and he reminded me that in Regano's Roman Coin, a Pabst Tide House on Brady Street, which I believe was built in like 1890. It was 18 something. I mean, think about that for a minute. Well, of course that place is going to have spirits. But anyways, the bartender shared with me that the building that Regano's Roman Coin is in has from time to time had a little bit of hauntings. For example, one of the other bartenders used to live upstairs in the unit above the bar. Her partner left for the day, went down the stairs and out the door. Soon after that, she heard footsteps coming up the stairs, and she was standing right by the door, and she was going to open it up and say, "Hi, well, honey, what did you forget?" And she went ahead and opened up the door, but there was no one there. same bartender I was talking to tonight said, just this evening, he came in, keyed open the door, walked fully into the bar, and had forgotten to turn off the alarm. And the alarm didn't go off. And when this idea popped into his head, he put eyeballs on where the alarm pad sits in the bar, and then it went off. I love stuff like this. It's so fantastic. Milwaukee, there's a little bar over in the Walker's Point area called Shakers. The guy that owns that joint literally knows every ghost story that Milwaukee has to offer, and we have a bunch of them. But perhaps what got me through a bit of my melancholia earlier today was the fact that not only does Milwaukee have these beautiful colors, not only do we have all these fabulous ghost stories, we have some great haunted theaters, and the entire state of Wisconsin does. And it occurred to me that, you know, haunted theaters are the stuff of mythic legend, right? Like Andrew Lloyd Webber's Phantom of the Opera is about a haunted theater. And it occurred to me, I think some of you may know that I played classical and all different kinds of violin for many years. And when I was in high school, I was lucky enough with the Milwaukee Youth Symphony Orchestra to play in Carnegie Hall. So being in theaters, I've also done a wee bit of the acting, you know, go figure. And theaters, it would seem to be totally obvious that when you have, especially older theaters, you've got people that for so many nights go out there and give their emotional sort of vulnerable, spill it all out guts. And the people that are watching the actor or the dancer or the musician, they're all, then the people out there in the audience give that back. Of course, places with that kind of energy, right, would maybe be a wee haunted, a wee touched by the spirits. So all of this, I tried to get it out of my bad mood this morning. And all of that made me smile a bit. And what really made me smile is that in the second half of this show, speaking of theaters and orchestras and musicians and the Phantom of the Opera, the Pink Floyd slash the Who's Tommy plus Andrew Lloyd Webber, the musical director for the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, is going to join Anya and I live on air in the second half of the Maggie Dawn Show. I've got so many questions. I was so pumped when I saw this come across our communication stream, Anya. I thought, I want to talk to this musical director who's also a founding member. I mean, just an incredibly successful and interesting orchestra, right? So much to talk about in the second half. What's you have something that you especially want me to ask him, and I have made note of that. We're not going to spill the beans now, but I thought it was such a great question, and his answer was so lovely, and you reminded me of it. So we're going to spend the entire second half of the show listening to some TSO and talking to their musical director. All right, now with all that positivity, I have to turn the page and talk about, you know, the issue at hand. So we have a new Speaker of the House of Representatives. In my opinion, they all just caved because, again, they were too embarrassed. They were too tired to bear it any longer. So they picked a dude that nobody really knows until we start to know him, right? Oh, to know him is not to love him. I'm going to share some of the things that I found the most troubling. And Anya's found some sound for us of the new speaker talking. And just in case you didn't know what the scary thing was at the top of the show, or two things. That was Mike Johnson saying, like, we're going to get her done, basically. That in and of itself is very scary. The second bit of sound you heard was a posse of GOP hard right House members booing when an ABC reporter had the audacity to ask Mike Johnson if Joseph R. Biden was the duly elected president of the United States, and they wouldn't answer. My newly minted Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, would not answer. That's why I was a little scared today. A little scared. Anyways, I'm Maggie Dawn. She's Anya Esther. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked, everybody. You better call Ghostbusters. Ow. Back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. She's Anya Esther, and you are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you want to join us for this segment before the bottom of the hour, 844-967-2789. We were doing a momentary reflection on all the wonderfulness of Wisconsin in the fall and the holiday season, but we had to face the very scary reality that Representative Mike Johnson of Louisiana is now the Speaker of the House. Oh, dear. It's really that bad. So the man has basically no relevant experience. I mean, nearly one of the most substantively, forget his policy positions, but like substantively in terms of the management skills of being the Speaker of the House. substantively is probably one of the least qualified members of Congress. Has never held a leadership position, has never chaired a committee. Okay. So, if you haven't yet seen a picture of Speaker Mike Johnson, you should pull one up. Not while you're driving. Don't do this now, but you can look at him. And he looks like Beaver Cleaver, right? He looks like, this guy, how bad can this guy be? And indeed, that's kind of how he's gotten by for a while. And so everybody is sort of whimsically referred to him as Jim Jordan with a suit coat on and less of a sneer. But I would argue that the guy's more dangerous because, unlike Jim Jordan, most people had no idea who he was. I would argue that when the vote went down, there were many Republicans in that room that didn't know how extreme this guy is. So, very briefly, he basically ran a high-pressure campaign to get 125 of his House colleagues to sign onto an amicus brief challenging the election results in Arizona and Pennsylvania on completely garbage grounds. The guy is a lawyer. He's fairly well-read in constitutional matters. And he basically leaned on people. Many of them complained later when the suit was booted by the Supreme Court for having a lack of standing. After the case was tossed out, and this stuff to me is really interesting because, you know, I'm the nerdy lawyer. So after this case was tossed out, where he basically strong-armed a bunch of his colleagues into signing on to this friend of the court or amicus brief, he was asked in a New Yorker interview why he thought Trump's legal team had basically failed in every case they brought to challenge the election outcomes. They did it in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Georgia, and Arizona. Many of you know I had to deal with some of that in my day job. And in every one of those states and cases, almost without exception, there were a couple where some small technical elements of what were things that were complained about were said by the court to be like, yep, but that should be done differently. But no case, not a single claim, nothing ever reversed a vote or threw out a vote or found that things had any level of systemic or organized or intentional fraud. None of it. Zero. Batted zero. Okay? So he gets asked by the New Yorker, why is it that Trump lost on everything that mattered about this? And here's what his answer was. It appears that some of the larger law firms that might have been lined up early on backed out. And then Rudy Giuliani was in charge. I just don't think their army of lawyers was large enough. Leave it to a lawyer to be like, hey, why'd you lose that case? Was it because the argument was bogus and you had no facts to support it? No, there just weren't enough lawyers. Thank you, Speaker Johnson, for that searing insight. The guy's an election denialist. I'm sure lots of the other wonderful hosts on civic media will talk about the election denialism, the tweets, all of it. But I wanted to point that little part out because, wow. No, they didn't have enough lawyers. Nothing about the merits. I mean, he just said the quiet part out loud there, didn't he? Nothing about the facts, nothing about the law. Anya, if you've got that sound of him going completely bananas about a woman's right, let's just roll that. That and this are part of what really bothered me about this guy.
Roe v. Wade gave constitutional cover to the elective killing of unborn children in America, period. You think about the implications of that on the economy. We're all struggling here to cover the bases of Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid and all the rest. If we had all those able-bodied workers in the economy, We wouldn't be going upside down and toppling over like this. Listen.
The gentleman.
I will not yield. I will not. Roe was a terrible corruption of America's constitutional jurisprudence. Roe v. Wade gave.
Let me recap. There's no gray area. It's his set of religious beliefs or the highway, though we live in a secular democracy. And oh, by the way, why you want to force women to have babies? Yeah, that's so that we can like stick them on the factory line so that they can produce.
That reminds me of a hilarious homemade billboard I used to see when I would drive from Milwaukee back to Wausau, my hometown. It was like a little wagon up on a hill on the side of a field, and it had been written in letters, and it said, 45 million aborted babies who will never, what? What do you think? Who will never what? 45 million
who will never pay taxes?
Who will never pay Social Security. That's what it said for 8 years. And now it just says, let's go, Brandon. So.
Well, it's good to see that the thinking has evolved.
Yes,
much more
yes.
nuanced, isn't it?
It is.
Much
it is.
Very warm and fuzzy. Boy. Here's another probably lesser known fact that I am going to bet nobody on this network has yet pointed out. This guy, during the Trump presidency, you remember when Nancy Pelosi ripped up her copy of his State of the Union speech? Yeah. This guy made an argument that it was a crime, a felony, and then she needed to be criminally prosecuted. You know, well-balanced. Oh, before we go to break. Also, basically anti anything that's LGBTQIA+, and thinks gay marriage, just like abortion, is an abomination. That's your Speaker of the House of Representatives, election denier, insurrectionist, equal rights for all, except, you know, if you're different than that guy. I'm Maggie Dawn. When we come back, the musical director of the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, you're not going to want to miss this. So many questions. Keep it. Back, everybody. I am Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Never forget, you can go get that app for free from your favorite app store, and then you can hear us wherever you are on planet Earth, crystal clear. Well, I am so excited, like tickled is an understatement, to be joined by the musical director, one of the original founding members, and musician extraordinaire, Al Petrelli of the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Welcome, Al, and my break a leg on tour, my friend. It's so fun to have you here.
Well, I'm glad to be here. Thank you so much for having me. And I appreciate the sentiment, but I did break my leg in the middle of a show in 2008, and I shan't repeat that. So,
oi. Well, I did it last year, not last year, 2021. Tib fib compound fracture. I'm with you, man. Like one and done. Never want to do that stuff again. Brutal recovery. How you doing now? You good?
Yeah.
Oh,
awesome.
Wonderful. Awesome. Well, first of all, I want to say everybody out there in Wisconsin listening land, I think it is the coolest thing that TSO is beginning their Christmas season tour in Green Bay, Wisconsin on November 15th. Like, how dope is that? Thank you for picking Wisconsin to start your show. Why Green Bay? Why kick it off there?
You know, I have absolutely nothing to do with the routing or any of that. I just know that our management team, they're usually a year and a half before the tour actually starts looking at the routing for something of this size. And listen, the Resch has been a great home for us forever. I mean, to walk through the parking lot and look at Lambeau Field and, you know,
yes,
have all that is Green Bay. It's outstanding to do so. So I'm glad it worked out. Opening night on November 15th, we're going to start working ridiculously hard starting tomorrow to make sure that we run this show two or three times a day for the better part of 3 weeks. So opening night will be a perfect first show. because it's mandatory and paramount to us to outdo ourselves from last year. And that's what we pretty much work year round to really make the show even bigger and better than it has been. And last year was pretty over the top.
Your sound is so interesting and layered in it, and it comes from so many different genres. It's this wonderfully integrative sound, and it's immersive, right? The concerts, the sound systems. How many trucks are you guys rolling up to these venues? How long does it take to set up and break down the stage? Like, how awesome is your road crew to do this? I can't even imagine. And that's without getting to how many of you there are. But how? give us an idea how many trucks you got.
Well, to put it in perspective, this TSO opened its eyes, if you will, for the first time in winter of 95 when the song Christmas Eve Sarajevo went to radio and changed everybody's life involved. We did our first shows in 1999, and we had one 24-foot box truck, two buses, and a fire machine. Okay. Last year, I counted 21 tractor trailers, 12 buses, and 100 people on the crew, and a lot more fog machines. You know, so it has grown up over the past several decades. Just like one of your kids growing up, you know, from infancy to all of a sudden, here we are. So when you look at the schedule and you look at the amount of people involved with it, you know, it's just been a slow growth over decades. How many trucks do we have this year? Probably 22 or 23. You know, crew, 80% of the crew has been with us for the better part of 20-something years. You know, they love this as much as we do. When people ask the setup time, I tell them they have 30 days to set up the rig for the first show. They got 8 hours for the second show, you know? So they're rehearsing the show as much as we're rehearsing the show. Yes. When we get to, you know, they even have like the truck parking down to, you know, it being choreographed to who backs in first, who does what. It's a science. And watching it unfurl is fascinating to me. Like, that's why I'm so psyched. We just talking about it off air. I'm getting on an airplane tomorrow to fly to Omaha, and I'm not even going to the hotel. I want to go right to the Mid-America Center where we're rehearsing and walk into the arena and for the first time this year see exactly what's going on. You know, I feel like a 15-year-old every time I do that, you know. So it's as exciting and brand new for me and everyone else on stage and underneath the stage as it is for you guys in the audience.
There is something, the way that like empty arenas and like massively huge theaters smell like. I have never been able to accurately describe it to anybody, but it is a thing, right? And there's that like sort of electrical energy and like the more people that start to come in and it's like, oh yeah, man, I can, this is going to happen in a couple hours. I love that feeling. You guys do create such a unique atmosphere. Has that evolved over time, or did you come out like fully birthed, like, we're going to have pyro and it's going to have this incredible sound? Like, how did you get here?
That is the $20 question of the day, girl. In answer to your question, as far as did we, my job has always been on the musical side. I've been Paul O'Neill's musical director from the jump. And what you got to understand about Paul, he was a couple years older than me, but we both grew up in or around New York City in the 70s.
Oh, I was going to ask you about your accent. I lived in Manhattan for a few years. I was like, my man, I haven't had anybody talk like this to me in a while. Go ahead now.
It's going to come back, I promise you.
Okay, cool.
But listen, so you know the city then. You know, you got Madison Square Garden. And back in the day, you know, Zeppelin would come through, AC/DC, Aerosmith, Pink Floyd, The Who, you know. Yep. And when they come to New York, they'd always put on even more production because that was hometown for most of the record companies back then. Sure. And uptown, you had Lincoln Center, you know, and you had the maestro, Leonard Bernstein, conducting the New York Philharmonic. And somewhere in between the two, you got the Theater District in Broadway with Andrew Lloyd Webber's works coming to life, you know. And when you grow up in that environment, and when you grow up a child of the 60s listening to AM radio, because it was before FM radio, you're just, the only two styles of music that we had growing up was good and bad. That was it. So it's either you liked what was coming through the little car stereo or you didn't like it. And it was songs from West Side Story and A Sound of Music. It was Beatles. It was Motown. It was all, just everything. Yeah. So if you thought that was Paul and my kind of like musical introduction to everything, when he decided to sit down and create the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, it wasn't painted into any particular corner. He wasn't getting jammed up in any one particular genre of music because all his songs, all his characters have to have a different underscoring. And that's what fun and so fascinating for me as a musician. One minute, you know, I'd be playing, you know, honky tonk, blues, piano. Next minute, I'm playing, you know, that stuff on the guitar and everything in between. One second, I'm recording a Mozart symphony, you know, or a Beethoven symphony. So when you think about musically how diverse it is, and you go back to, you know, us cutting our teeth in the city, when we did our first show, you know, it was like a fog machine was, that was a big effect in 99, you know, and a couple lights. And then the next year, more shows were added and Paul put everything back into the show. So there's more fog machines. Once he got introduced to pyro, it was on, you know.
Right.
He wanted pyro. He didn't just want to do what Kiss had done, you know, just blow stuff up. He wanted the pyro to be another member of the band. So it's dancing to Beethoven.
It serves a purpose. It's so intentional. Yes.
100%. It's all part of the show. And I'm glad you said that because, you know, as a listener in the audience, the listener may or may not realize why this is so impactful or why they're enjoying it so much, because everything is spot on, synced up perfectly, musically and visually. And it creates a whole nother dimension of the experience that is a TSO show.
It scratches sort of that subliminal itch in a way when like all of your senses are firing, right? You've got, and you can feel like the human connection. Live music is so beautiful for that, right? And music that is integrative in the way that TSO is. I just before you came on air, I'd shared with some folks, I grew up playing the violin and I was about burned out because I'd come up playing classical and my mom found this group. And we played everything, show tunes, bar mitzvahs, bat mitzvahs, church music, all the R&B. And it was like all the little parts of my brain started to light up because it was like, oh, yeah, this is much more fun when you get to do all of it. And you guys are such an incredible sort of very experiential, very physical manifestation of that. For folks that haven't listened to it, you've already heard it, I guarantee, right? Like everybody's heard TSO tunes. And if you haven't been to a show, like I cannot more highly recommend it. It's such a, you're so energized from what you all do on that stage. It's so appreciated. I do want to mention, if you want to get those tickets in Green Bay, November 15th, that's where TSO kicks off this amazing tour. They're also playing November 27th at the Fiserv Forum right here in downtown Milwaukee near the end of their tour. They're doing 62 cities, 104 performances between November 15th and December 30th. I'm exhausted even thinking about it. Holy. Yes. How many performing musicians are in TSO right now?
Well, on stage at any given time, you're going to have about 24, 25 people, which is including, you know, the string section.
Yes.
You know, what people don't really know until I make a point of introducing them to it is the, you know, 90 or so bodies underneath and above and behind the stage that allow this thing to come to life sometimes twice a day. You know, and like you said, you know, you may not really understand all the where the devil's in the details and why this whole thing has come together, but I feel it's my responsibility to bring to everybody's attention how many people it really takes to put a show on like this, never to miss a downbeat. You know, I would do this show three times a day. I live for this. I turn into a 15-year-old every time I put that guitar around my neck. I don't think that the crew shares my enthusiasm, you know, as much because they. The morning and loading out at midnight and then driving 400 miles to the next show. So, but like I had said earlier, most of them have been with me for decades and they love this thing as much as I do. So there's a lot that goes into it, but house lights go down, curtain comes up and something blows up on stage. It's the best time ever. Love it.
Yeah. It requires so much precision to pull off what you all do that I deeply respect how much thanks you're expressing for all the people that have to contribute to make that work in such a seamless way for that audience experience. It's really something special. Anybody that's ever done even the smallest production, and that could have been when you were a kid in your backyard, somebody's got to be standing back there telling people where to go and when to do it, right? Like it doesn't matter. It takes so much effort to do that. I wanted to share some facts about why... new facts that maybe all the listeners haven't heard about why TSO is so special. And the first thing I wanted to start with was the fact that of every ticket you sell, a dollar is donated to charity. And so over this incredible touring history that you have, frankly, record setting, you will always be sort of in the annals of touring musical live performances. Over that history, begun in, was it 1999? To date, y'all have given away over $18 million to charities. And that is just... Who had the foresight to go, hey man, we can share the wealth a little bit here and have an impact? Because that's really incredible.
Yeah, who's the cool socialist on your team, Al? Do you need another?
I'll say that last part again.
Oh, if you needed another, I just, you know, former roadie could always be a current one, Al, in case you ever need somebody.
No. Listen, all credit's where credit's due is Paul O'Neill and the O'Neill family. You know, when I met Paul, it was in the middle 80s in New York City. We were both kind of cutting our teeth, kicking around town. We'd run into each other at some club or some studio, venue, whatever. And, you know, we became buds. And, like, we'd be walking to get a slice of pizza or whatever we were doing. Like clockwork. We'd be shoulder to shoulder on 3rd Avenue going somewhere. And I turn over to talk to him. And I'm like, where'd you go? And I look, and he's half a block behind me. And this happened almost every time we were out together. And he's handing some random stranger a $10 bill, a $5 bill, a $20, have in his pocket. And he would tell me, he goes, look, dude, the 10 isn't going to change my life, but it may change that person's day. And if I maybe change a person's day, maybe they got a chance at a better tomorrow. And when we started touring, it was paramount to him, his wife, his daughter, as she grew up, to give back to the community for two reasons. One is to, you know, just say thank you for putting us on the map and to get involved with charities that the money is going to get to people who are in need, you know. And he said $1 from every ticket we sell from show number one in Philadelphia, the Tower Theater in 99, until whatever we closed out at last year. Like you said, I think it's 18 million tickets we've sold, give or take, not including what we're doing this year. And for eternity, or as long as this goes on, that will continue on. Now, a dollar doesn't seem like it's going to make a big difference, but again, if you add them up, they will.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Oh, love it.
That's the reaction we were hoping for.
Oh, yeah. It's so good. I mean, everybody has heard that cut of an intro, right? And it's like, oh, yay. I'm so glad this one's on the radio. There's so much holiday music that I can't bear anymore. But TSO stuff is always such a pleasure to hear. I'm so humbled to be joined by the musical director and one of the original founding members of the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, Al Petrelli, joining me from Pennsylvania. We were talking in the break a little bit about New York City and Manhattan in particular. It's so fun to talk to you, hear you talking about different spots in the city. I'm born and raised in Milwaukee, but I ended up having the opportunity to move to New York for work. And it was such, it was like, oh, this is this old pair of jeans that I didn't know fit me this well. You know, it was like, I got a lot of oxygen and a lot of energy and will always take a little bit of New York with me. So such a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining me, Al.
No worries. It's been a pleasure. And thank you so very much for everything.
Yeah. So leading up to your joining me this evening, I was emailing with one of your colleagues trying to set up the show. And I emailed him and I said, hey, we're going to do TSO stuff for intros and outros for the different blocks. And I said, does Al have like a couple, two, three songs that are his absolute favorites? And your guy wrote back and he's like, no, he doesn't. They're all his babies. He's the musical director. And to me, that was like, oh, that told me a lot about you because there is so much heart into these arrangements. Some of the more familiar music, right? But it sounds so differently. But I got to ask you, Al, I got you here. Come on, there's got to be one that like you particularly love or at least it's like, boy, I really put it out there when I got that arranged like that, or, you know, reconstructed it. There's got to be one.
Well, it's a fun question because, you know, it's like asking me which one of my children are my favorite. Kind of depends on what day it is, you know, who's been the least. If I had to pick one song, not child, I think the one you were just playing, Christmas Eve, Sarajevo, 1224, because that's the lightning strike that occurred 28 years ago, almost to the day, when it first was released accidentally to radio.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, what?
How does something get released accidentally in a radio?
I mean, I've definitely released things accidentally on this radio, but...
Well, you got to think about the time, 95, you know, the 80s generation of guitar rock and roll was pretty much over with. The entire Seattle movement was taking over, and that's fine. So here I am in the recording studio in 95 working with Paul O'Neill on this very dark, dramatic piece of music that was basically written to underscore a story that he was trying to tell about the war in Sarajevo.
Right.
All right? You know, when he put the faders up and I looked at him, I was like, dude, what's with the Christmas song? He explained the entire story, you know, about classical cellist would go down to the town square in Sarajevo and play Bach and Beethoven and Chopin pieces in protest to the bombing. And what Paul didn't know is that I was Alice Cooper's musical director before the war, and I played in Zagreb and Belgrade, and I was in the town square that he was describing in this story, you know? And I said, dude, press record. And that's where I just started kind of noodling with that little theme. He started humming God Rest You Merry Gentlemen. And we were like fist bumping and high fiving. He's like, that is the most incredible piece of music ever. I said, I don't know who's ever going to hear it. You know, who's going to listen to that version of a Christmas song? Well, there was a DJ in Tampa, Florida named Mason Dixon, who it landed in his hand accidentally. He played it for whatever the reason, and his phone lines lit up that he'd never seen a reaction like that. He sent it to Scott Shannon up at WPLJ in New York, which was the parent station. And he goes, you got to play this song just once and see what happens. And it was on. We had the number one requested song in America, I think within 24 hours. You know you got a hit on your hands when talk radio is playing the song. Yeah. It was extraordinary. And then this, you know, Christmas time's over and that was the end of it. But Paul said, no, I'm writing an entire record around that one piece of music. And the record's going to be called Christmas Eve and Other Stories, and the band's going to be called the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. And I'm like, I'm in. You know, well, this is, you created an art form. You created fantastic art that didn't exist before.
You and evolved the thing, right? That is, that is extraordinary. I think for so many of us, the holidays can be really difficult. And so there is this incredible humanity in the melancholia, I think the angst, some of the like anger in that, it's just this intensely emotional experience that really connects with anybody that hears it. And I think we all owe you and Paul a debt of thanks because it is so cathartic in so many ways for many of us.
And that you said that, and I appreciate it because one of the things that I didn't realize. Now, remember, I recorded this music, I don't know, I was 34, 35 years old, you know, 28 years ago. And getting older, I've realized that so many people relate to Paul's story about missing somebody because everybody misses somebody.
Yeah.
You know, and especially around the holidays, you know, there's an empty chair in my dining room table upstairs for a reason that will always stay empty because there's people in my life that have left for whatever the reason. Either we don't talk because life kicked in or they passed on. But everybody in the arena, everybody listening to Paul's beautifully written story can relate and make it about themselves because you can't get away from it. In life, you're going to miss people. And I always say that I'd rather miss somebody than have never had them in my life. You know, and you're right, it is very bittersweet and there is a certain amount of stress and melancholy. But when you look around the arena, when the story is coming to life, you know, you think that you're alone in that sentiment of missing somebody when you realize the other 17,000 people are going through the same thing. It doesn't negate what you're feeling, but there's some sense of, I don't know, maybe community or family that we're all kind of going through this together and it makes it a little easier to deal with. And it's okay to be sad, you know? There's nothing you can do about it.
we're going to have to end right there with it. Being together makes the sad stuff much easier to bear. A burden shared is a burden borne. It has been my great honor to be joined by Al Petrelli of the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Get those tickets, folks. They kick off the concert Green Bay, Wisconsin on November 15th in Milwaukee, December 27th at the Fiserv. Go check it out. Thank you, Al, so very much. It's been a pleasure, sir.
Enjoyed this greatly. Have a wonderful time.
You too. Take care, friend.